It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A trip to the World Series is on the line as the Milwaukee Brewers face the Los Angeles Dodgers for Game 6 of the National League Championship Series tonight at Miller Park. We check in with a sports writer for the latest. What are you watching for as we head into Game 6? What did you think of Brewers manager Craig Counsell's creative use of the bullpen on Wednesday? Are you hoping to see more creativity tonight with the World Series at stake? Got a burning question about the Brewers that you'd like to ask our expert? Call us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email address ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. J.R. Ratcliffe is a trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He also hosts the Journal Sentinel's Milwaukee Brewers podcast. J.R., welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the Brewers find themselves kind of up against the wall. They need to win two straight games at home against the Dodgers to make it to the World Series. How big a challenge are they facing tonight for Game 6?
Well, it's the same challenge they've been facing the last five games against this team. This Dodgers team, I think you could argue, is the best team in the National League. You could easily put the Brewers up in that conversation, too. The Brewers won the most games this year in the NL, but the Dodgers are really good. They've got a Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame pitcher, and Clayton Kershaw, who threw in Game 5 and made their life miserable and helped the Dodgers take a 3-2 lead in the series. They've got an offense that just never lets up. They're good pretty much 1-8 in the lineup. So they're a very tough team, but that being said, the Brewers and Dodgers have scored the same number of runs through the first five games. The Brewers have kind of found a strategy that has worked for them, so they've made it pretty interesting with the Dodgers, that's for sure. And now they get two more home games, and if they win them both, they'll be in their first World Series since 1982.
When they were in the American League.
Right, yeah, the year I was born, the year a lot of Brewers fans are have no recollection of, or just faintest recollections of. So yeah, it's a long time coming.
Yeah, I still remember having to listen to the St. Louis Cardinals home announcer call the games on CBS radio, and I still have nightmares
yeah.
about that. Anyway, the Brewers have lost their last two games in this series. It's the first time they've lost back-to-back games in more than a month. So what do they need to do tonight to get back on track?
I mean, pretty much every baseball game at this stage is kind of a coin flip. You know, it's not something that you could say for sure there's one or two things they need to do. Certainly, their offense has not been as good as we came to expect them to be in this series so far. They've got the future. He's going to win National League MVP. Christian Yelich, he has struggled a little bit. Some of their bigger hitters, Jesus Aguilar, Mike Moustakas, have really, really scuffled in this series. And it's just not making solid contact, not moving runners over when they get a chance. That's something people have stressed out about a little bit. I think primarily they just need those guys to have some big hits. I mean, Lorenzo Cain, who'd been struggling, had a couple hits in Game 5, and including an RBI double, so it seems like he's kind of coming around after struggling in this postseason. I mean, those are the guys who've made this run so memorable. And, if they're not hitting the ball, if they're not figuring out a way to get to the pitcher tonight, Ryu, for the Dodgers, they're not going to win. So they need some of their big guns to start swinging the bat.
Well, do you suppose they're maybe gripping the bats a little too tightly? Sometimes that can happen in a playoff.
Yeah, I mean, the word is pressing that you'll start to throw around when a team is struggling on offense. But, I mean, that's kind of the beauty and the frustration of a short series like this. Like, there haven't been enough games where you can safely say they're slumping even. It's just not that big of a sample. If this happened during the regular season, nobody would bat an eye. I mean, they've lost back-to-back games, but, they also won the previous game 4-0 and could have easily had either of the previous two games. And one of these losses is an extra inning loss that went 13 innings. So, I mean, they're still right there. Their pitching's been so good to keep them in it.
Okay, so in this series, Brewer manager Craig Counsell has gotten a little bit creative with the use of the team's bullpen. Do you expect to see that going forward?
I think so. They're set up. Their starters, it'd be Wade Miley, who pitched in Game 5 and then was taken out, much to everyone's surprise, after one batter, some strategic maneuvering there in Game 5. He'll be starting again tonight. He's going to be the first pitcher in a long time, and I don't remember the year, but I think it might be as far back as like 1904 or 1920, who starts back-to-back World Series games. He'll be pitching a more traditional outing tonight. He'll probably go... I'm sure the team hopes he goes 5-6 innings. That's probably the most he would go. And then tomorrow, if they win, they've got really kind of their workhorse, the lone guy that you could say is a starter that they really trust through and through, and Yoelis Chacin, who's been phenomenal this year. He would work in Game 7. It'll probably be a little more traditional than we've seen lately, but Craig Counsell has shown throughout the playoffs, throughout September, even before that, that he's willing to go to bullpen guys whenever there's even the faintest sign of trouble or just to get the right matchup. So we'll probably see a pretty aggressive bullpen usage yet again.
J.R. Ratcliffe is a trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He also hosts the Journal Sentinel's Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Game 6 and Game 7, if we need one, or if there is one, it will be played at Miller Park. How big a home field advantage is Miller Park for the Brewers?
I believe they had the most wins there of any team in the National League this year, and so it's a pretty good one. And there have been some years where it hasn't been, and the team's been still pretty decent. It's kind of, again, one of those things that comes and goes. But I mean, needless to say, at this stage of the season, it's just such a different atmosphere. It is a park that caters to home run hitters, especially if you're going to right field. So the Brewers have a couple pretty good left-handed power bats, and Mike Moustakas and Travis Shaw. Jesus Aguilar is very good at going the opposite field, so they've had a few home runs. It certainly has helped the home run hitting in that regard. They've done very well there, and you know, if you've ever been to a playoff game at Miller Park, you know kind of what the atmosphere is capable of. It's a pretty exciting place to be, and after three straight games on the West Coast, it's going to be refreshing to come home and have an audience in your favor.
And be in the right time zone. The Brewers, though, I mean, this has been a real surprise season for the Brewers in many ways. They weren't really expected to do what they've done kind of ahead of their plan. I mean, it's been we've been rebuilding for quite a while. So, I mean, I guess we have to we want to be in the World Series. It'd be a disappointment if we weren't. But, gosh, they've done way better than anybody expected, haven't they?
Yeah, I think. That's the whole fan philosophical thing. If you're told at the beginning of the year they'd be in the NLCS, you take it. But yeah, obviously being in this position, and Brewers fans know this from 2011, you just don't know. You don't know when you're going to be back, and you want to make sure you get the most out of the opportunity you have. But yeah, this is sort of in a macro sense. They are a little bit ahead of the game. The general manager, David Stearns, who is a very young guy, a lot of attention is on that, took over this team in 2015, and they were looking at what I think a lot of fans thought would be a pretty extensive rebuild. And there were a couple teams, the Cubs and the Houston Astros come to mind, as teams that had sort of just gone through a rebuild, and it had taken them a long time, 5-6 years, really compiling talent at the young, lower levels of their minor league system. Then once it finally filtered up, they saw some returns at the big league level. The Brewers didn't need that long. Everyone sort of assumed they would. It would be 6 years, maybe 5 years, 6 years. And here they are 3 years later, with the most wins in the National League, most wins, tied for the most wins in franchise history. I don't think anybody saw that coming, but after last year, there was a sign that they were really ahead of schedule when they finished one game away from a playoff spot. They were one game away from tying the Rockies and maybe even, you know, getting a tiebreaker opportunity to get into the playoffs. So that certainly informed them that they were ahead of the game, and they made a ton of moves in the offseason and at the trade deadline during the season to bolster what they already had, and the general manager David Stearns gets a lot of credit for that, and deservedly so. I mean, he's turned them around very, very quickly.
J.R. Ratcliffe is a trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He also hosts the Journal Sentinel's Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Thank you for joining us, J.R. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Hope it's a good one for everybody.
Yeah, of course, if the Brewers win, then their reward is they get to face the Boston Red Sox. Stick around later this hour for more on the Brewers and an infamous song that's getting a lot of play in light of the team's playoff run. On today's Wisconsin Life, we'll go behind the music with the song Turning Up the Heat. That's Wisconsin Life in about half an hour. Coming up next, Giant Pumpkins. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, fall means a lot of things in Wisconsin. One of them is that it's time for pumpkins. In this edition of Wisconsin Weekend, we check in with two Wisconsin growers about how the pumpkin crop is this year, how to grow giant pumpkins, and learn about interactive activities involving this fruit in the state. How are pumpkins part of your family's fall activities, and where do you go to get them, and how do you use pumpkins? Glenn Martin is a member of the board of directors of the Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers. Glenn, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you.
So, giant pumpkins, why did you start growing them?
Well, mainly it's a we don't know whether it's a hobby or a sport, okay? One thing is
okay.
That we don't know for sure. You have to, first of all, you have to hunt it down, okay, the best seeds and this and that. And the other one is the sport part is that all of a sudden you've got the activity of growing it, okay? So it's kind of hunting, kind of sport.
And I suppose there's some competition to see who can grow the biggest one.
Oh, of course, yes. This basically I started this all started in a tavern, okay? You know how the tavern brings.
Boy, that's a Wisconsin thing. This all started in a tavern.
Started in a tavern. Well, they had a contest, and all of a sudden we were at a birthday party, and they had it on a blanket. They carried a 400-pound pumpkin through the door. It was my wife that actually got it started, and she says, I'm going to grow one bigger than those boys, okay? And that's what started this crazy process, okay? It's an addiction.
So that started
probably 10 years ago.
Okay. So when we talk about giant pumpkins, how big are we talking? You mentioned one that was 400 pounds that went through a tavern door. What's the average giant pumpkin these days?
What's the average? Well, I'll just tell you what the Wisconsin state record is right now.
Okay.
It's over a ton, okay? It's 2,283 pounds, okay? That's the biggest one.
How do you even get that out of the field?
Yeah, that is getting to be a trick, okay? So we use what we call a lifting ring, and we with straps that go down in the bottom. So it's like a lifting ring that looks like a wheel, like a wheel off of a tractor, okay? And we run 6 straps or 8 straps down to the bottom with rings in the bottom, and then you run a rope around the bottom, and that's how you pick it up and move it. It's getting to be challenging to move, I'll tell you that.
Got to have a pretty big machine to lift that much, also. I would think.
It takes a good-sized machine, yes.
Yeah. What varieties do people turn to grow giant pumpkins?
The varieties we're growing is Dill's Atlantic Giants, okay? They were basically bred up in the northeastern Canada area, up in the Providence states up there, what they call the Atlantic region up in that area.
The Maritimes?
The Maritimes, yes, up in the Maritimes, yes. And people think that they do better in the hotter weather. No, they don't. They do better in what we call 65 at night and 85 during the day. That's Wisconsin has that kind of weather, and we do very well in growing.
Glenn Martin is a member of the board of directors of the Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers. How are pumpkins part of your family's fall activities? Where do you go to get them, and how do you use them? 800-642-1234. Tell us your pumpkin story. 800-642-1234. Do you grow giant pumpkins? And how big was your giant pumpkin this year? 800-642-1234. So, Glenn, tell us what goes into growing a giant pumpkin as opposed to just growing the regular kind. How do you get it to keep growing?
Well, the whole trick is that all of a sudden we control the growth of the plant just like you prune an apple tree, but you got to remember this is fast-paced. These plants grow upwards to 6 inches to a foot a day, okay? The vine growth is. And the pumpkin growth can be upwards to 50 pounds a day, okay? And to explain that, that's 2 pounds an hour, okay? Mm. So what it is, we start them indoors in April, and then mid to late April, and then we create a little mini greenhouse at the beginning of the season. But you got to remember, you got to vent them during the day, too, because it can get very warm. And then the pumpkin roots in at every leaf. That's the whole trick to growing them, is to get them to root in at every leaf, okay? And there's a lot of things that happen at every leaf, okay? At every leaf, you have a flower, you have a leaf, you have a root. So you got to figure out how to get them to root in. And then you got to figure out how to properly feed them, like you need nutrition, they need nutrition too, and then also how much water. That's the whole trick to growing them. And then the other one is to keep the predators away. You got a lot of predators that want this, from insects to animals to people that get in your garden and step in the wrong area.
Uh-oh.
Believe it or not.
So this hobby is starting to sound like a lot of work. Is there, Wisconsin has a lot of different soil types. Is there a type of soil that these giant pumpkins prefer?
Well, they like the little bit looser soil, okay? So you got to, if you live in an area that's heavy clay and stuff like that, you got to figure out how to amend your soil to make it so that all of a sudden it's a little bit of a looser soil, so that all of a sudden you're just like anything, your other crop, you know, you got to amend the soil and you got to figure out what it needs. So we do a soil test every spring and every fall. Yeah, there's work involved with it, but there's work involved with other sports or hobbies too. And then we have an annual weigh-off contest. Actually, we have like 5 of them in the state of Wisconsin every fall. And these are normally at festivals, okay? We do have one more coming up this weekend, and that's going to be at the Michigan Pumpkin Fest. That festival has been going on for over 25 years. They close the main street off, and we have a weigh-off there, and they have parade, and it's a party atmosphere, too, you know, to see who's going to win.
Sure. So what happens with these giant pumpkins at the end of the season? Are you make a whole bunch of pumpkin pie, or what happens to them?
Well, so we mainly set up a display with them. That's what me and my wife do. Every year we have a display that we set up at our yard and stuff like that. We're in the process of moving right now. It's because all of a sudden we found a piece of property where we could build a new home, and we're in the process of moving our pumpkin patch. Next year will be a new place. So this year it's kind of in limbo, but most people like to put them on display. As a matter of fact, is that I'm part of a bigger organization too called the Great Pumpkin Commonwealth, okay? And we have a website called bigpumpkins.com where you can find out all this information. And there, in that part of it, we have what we call an international annual convention, okay? And I tell people this, and it's held somewhere in the world, okay? It's been in London already, because we got growers over in England and in Europe. It's been in Portland, Oregon. But this following year, I'm snagged it to come on right here to Wisconsin, to Lambeau Field in March of 2019.
Wow.
We're going to have some of the top premier pumpkin growers in the world will be talking about how to grow giant pumpkins. And believe it or not, the enthusiasm at one of these events is contagious.
I would imagine. So giant pumpkins aren't the only focus of the giant pumpkin growers. What other things are people growing with the goal of seeing how big they can make them?
Well, we grow tomatoes. The biggest tomato grown in Wisconsin is 7¾ pounds. A bushel gourd, that's a green gourd that's growing for weight, okay, and that is like 330 pounds. They start out that they're just a normal little gourd. It's probably your average weight on them is probably only 15 to 25 pounds. We grow gourds for length, okay, and the world record on that right now is 149 inches. That's over 12 foot long, okay, growing from a trellis. Also field pumpkins, your regular Connecticut pumpkins that you see out in the gardens and stuff like that. We have, we grow them to 200 pounds. That's the world record. And also, I'm trying to think what other thing here, squash, green squash. Mm-hmm. It's a pumpkin variety, but it's got to be all green in color, okay? Can't have green, gray, or blue, but it can't have no orange or red in it, okay? So people go, wow, you're growing those different things. And they says, and we're trying different soils, different, you know, fertilizers, different pest control. Like I says, pest control is a big factor, trying to control the the critters.
And people with big feet who step in your garden in the wrong place.
Yeah, you get that too. So all of a sudden you get that. Or you get a woodchuck that comes in and starts, and they're tasty. They like to eat these things. So
yeah. Wow. We've got about 30, 40 seconds here. Leave us with some really quick advice for someone if they wanted to try their hand at growing big pumpkins and other assorted.
Well, the best
fruits.
Advice I can tell people is that the best advice is to get to know other pumpkin growers. Okay, we have a little community, and you can look our website up, Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers. We have fall events, layoffs. We also have winter events. We have seminars that we put on. Get to know these people, and they like competition. They want competition. They feel that all of a sudden it's more fun. Like the old saying goes, it's more fun in a race going around the track with other cars than just by yourself.
There you go. The more the merrier. Gosh, and this all started in a bar. That's fantastic. Glenn Martin, thank you for joining us, Glenn. I really appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Ben.
Glenn Martin is a member of the board of directors of the Wisconsin Giant Pumpkin Growers. They're online. Next up in Wisconsin Weekend, we head to Rice Lake to learn about flying pumpkins and trebuchets. We're going to see how many times this hour I can say that word. You heard that right, flying pumpkins. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We have a very distinct pumpkin theme for our Wisconsin weekend segments this week. Fall means a lot of things in Wisconsin. Of course, one of them is it's time for pumpkins. We're checking in with Wisconsin growers about the pumpkin crop. We just heard about how big they get, and now we're going to find out how many of them we get and how they did this year. How are pumpkins a part of your family's fall activities? Where do you go to get them, and how do you use them once you have them? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Andrew Mumson is the owner of Mumson's Harvest Hills Pumpkin Patch and Apple Orchard in Rice Lake. Andrew, welcome to the Morning Show.
Well, thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Hey, before we start, I have to share something quick, because when I saw the name come up when we were talking about this program, this made me think of this. I used to live in Rice Lake, worked in radio down there, and of course, Munson and Mumson sound a lot alike. And I used to get calls at home from people who wanted to buy strawberry plants and got angry when I refused to sell them. True
yeah,
story.
That sounds pretty likely, I guess.
Well, and isn't there a John Mumson in your family?
Yes, there is. Yeah. My uncle.
Okay, your uncle. Well, he and I used to get mixed up for each other a lot. So, anyway. But back to the show. So, how has the pumpkin crop been this season?
We have had probably our best pumpkin crop that we've ever had. The growing season this year with the hotter weather, the pumpkins just loved it. And actually, pollination was really good this year, which hasn't always been the case. So, it set a heavy crop and just grew very, very well. We had a great crop this year.
So how many different varieties of pumpkins do you grow there in Rice Lake?
You know, I kind of go for almost a shotgun approach on the pumpkin growing. I put about 75 different varieties of pumpkins in, probably 50 varieties of squash, and not all of those are successful every year. Some years we'll have a variety that just does so well, and the next year it might not do real well. So I've kind of found it's best to cover my bases completely and plant a lot of different varieties and kind of see what does well in that growing season.
We heard just a little bit ago from a fellow who grows giant pumpkins as a hobby that he starts them out in the house. How do you, when does your season start for preparing your pumpkins?
Well, I'm already kind of planning for which pumpkins I want to plant for next year, you know, based on what consumer demand is. We've really seen a lot of the white pumpkins becoming more and more popular the last few years, so we've increased the number of white pumpkins by a lot. And we don't start ours indoors at all. We plant ours all directly in the field with a planter by seed. And we have good success with that, them becoming ready in time for the season.
So how big an operation is this? How many acres of pumpkins do you have there?
Varies on the year. We're somewhere around 17 to 20 acres of pumpkins with the squash and other stuff included, squash and gourds.
Andrew Mumsen is the owner of Mumsen's Harvest Hills Pumpkin Patch and Apple Orchard in Rice Lake. Talk about your family's use of pumpkins. Is this part of your fall activities at your house? And where do you get them? How do you use them? Maybe you grow your own. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Tell us your pumpkin-related stories. Share them with us on email at ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Andrew, you said right now the white pumpkins are the most popular. Traditional orange still pretty popular, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the orange is definitely the most popular. But, you know, a lot of people might get a couple of orange and a white one to kind of add that extra color. And you know, a lot of times the squash, too, with the 50 varieties of squash we have, not all of them I would recommend for eating. Some are definitely tastier than the others, but, you know, that visual appeal of the different colors of squash and different shapes of squash really can add a lot to someone's display.
Well, it really has. Traditionally, it's kind of a symbol of the harvest season. The pumpkin, the squash, those fruits and vegetables we harvest in the fall. A lot of people use them for decorating outside. So which variety of pumpkin is the tastiest? If I wanted to buy one and I was going to make a pumpkin pie, from the source instead of the can, what variety would I be looking for?
Well, a lot of the smaller pumpkins, something that's just maybe around a little bigger than softball size, is got a lot higher sugar content in it than the big pumpkins. So those are the ones we would always recommend for like someone looking for a pie pumpkin to do pies with or anything.
Sure.
There's a lot of different recipes out there. You know, people will get a bigger pumpkin and carve it out and make soup inside of it and use the actual pumpkin as the soup bowl. And
really?
So there's a little different, a little different selection process depending what the person's looking for. But the smaller ones definitely have the higher sugar content.
Now, one interactive pumpkin activity at your farm involves catapults and cannons. Everybody in the morning show crew has been waiting for this moment when you tell us about flying pumpkins.
Oh, yes, yes. This weekend is our last pumpkin chunking weekend where we will be doing, we have two different catapults and pumpkin cannon, and then we have the apple shooter as well. Normal weekends we do the pumpkin cannon and apple shooter, but it's only a couple of special weekends where I get my dad out there and he does the catapulting. We've got the trebuchet catapult, which is the old-style French for tree bucket, where it's got a big counterweight on the end, about 2,000 pounds, and that swings down and the pumpkin flies out of there on a sling and is released. We've got a big spring-powered catapult that's got 12 garage door springs on there, and that really can pack a punch to a pumpkin, really throw it up far up in the air and come down hard. The air-powered cannon is about 40 to 50 PSI of air that we charge up in there. And with that, we've measured, comes out about 300 miles an hour. So I would say that's pretty quick for a pumpkin to travel.
How far do they go? How far can you throw one of these with the trebuchet?
The trebuchet is probably about 100 yards, maybe 75 yards. And that's a pretty heavy pumpkin that we throw with that.
I would imagine. I mean, this is a siege weapon we're talking about here.
Yeah. That's they used to use them to try to throw the dead cows and stuff down the opposing team's well. So. Oh, wow.
So how did this get started? How did the flying pumpkins and shooting apples and stuff like that, how did that get started?
Well, our farm, this is actually our 25th year in existence. My parents started it in 1993, and it was kind of right in the beginning of the agritourism, agritainment trend, and they were looking for a good way to advertise. So my dad decided to build a trebuchet catapult, got some plans off of the internet, of course, and we started building the catapult and had good success with that. We got in quite a bit of media that really increased the business at that time. So we added more pieces of artillery in the years since then.
So how many people show up to watch these pumpkins fly through the air? How big an attraction is this?
Oh, we have lots of people come through. You know, it's hundreds of people that come to watch it. And it always amazes me, you know, for all the years that we've been doing it, how many people will be out there and say, you know, this is my first time ever watching it. So there's always new people up there that have never seen it, which is always exciting.
And, of course, you have apples, too. So I'm imagining that there's probably apple cider and things like that there.
Yep. We've got apple cider. We're pretty famous for our caramel apples. So everyone always gets a caramel apple and wanders around the farm. We've got a couple of corn mazes, a big petting farm. It's got a lot of animals with bunnies and kittens and goats and llamas, pigs. And then there's a lot of play area in there as well. There's a big corn pit. There's a boat with straw bales that the kids really love running around and playing on. A couple of bounce houses. So
tell us from Rice Lake, tell us how to get to Harvest Hills.
We are on Highway SS, which is the main road that runs between Rice Lake and Cameron. So we're just outside of Rice Lake. If you start driving towards Cameron, start going south towards Cameron, you'll start going up a big hill. We're about halfway up the big hill on the right side, and it's hard to miss it. There's thousands of pumpkins out front and a big pumpkin tower, and you can see that there's lots of activity going on.
So a little way south of Rice Lake on Highway SS, which for old-timers like me was U.S. Highway 53. How big was your harvest this year? How many pumpkins or how many pounds of pumpkins do you think you ended up with?
Oh, man. Like, there's thousands of pumpkins.
What do you do with the ones that you don't shoot out of the trebuchet? Where do these pumpkins end up?
Well, you know, a lot of people, they're on a lot of people's doorsteps and stuff. So people are carving them up and using them in all sorts of decorations.
Okay. All right. Andrew, thanks so much for spending this time with us, and good luck with flinging those pumpkins through the air. One of these years I'm going to get down there and have a look at that.
Well, sounds great. Thank you.
Oh, you know what? You're staying with us. I'm sorry. I forgot where I was in my script. Andrew Mumpson of Mumpson's Harvest Hills stays with us. We'll continue our conversation about pumpkins and all things pumpkin-related coming up. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our conversation continues in a moment. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. Well, it's pumpkins everywhere, pumpkins flying through the air. On this edition of Wisconsin Weekend, we have Andrew Mumpson, the owner of Mumpson's Harvest Hills Pumpkin Patch and Apple Orchard, just south of Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Andrew, before the break, we were talking about flying pumpkins. What variety of pumpkin works best in the catapults?
Well, in the catapults, we like a nice, dense, heavy pumpkin. So actually, we use a smaller, like Atlantic Giant or something, the same what the big pumpkin growers do for the giant pumpkins. They're just nice, dense, heavy pumpkins that give that real good splat when they hit the ground.
I would imagine. So what about the you shoot some pumpkins out of cannons? What kind of pumpkins do you use there?
That's a smaller, nice, round pumpkin that rolls down the barrel. You know, the cannon went through a lot of trial and error to get figured out, actually, we didn't start out with the compressed air. We tried acetylene and oxygen and propane and different things to get that explosion that you think you should have, but nothing would work with that, and ended up trying the compressed air, and that worked really well. We would try to use a tight-fitting pumpkin and put some soapy water in the barrel to slide that pumpkin down, and found out that just a nice loose-fitting pumpkin that rolled right down there was the best thing to use.
See, this reminds me of shooting tennis balls out of beer can cannons in the dorms, but I probably shouldn't go there. So the pumpkins are flying on Saturday. When does that start?
12 to 5 every hour, Saturday and Sunday. So.
Okay. So what do we get out of what's so satisfying about smashing things like pumpkins? Why is this so popular?
Well, I'll tell you, there's something about the catapults that just is fascinating to see that pumpkin going up in the air, and it just, you know, it's almost graceful up in the air with a little bit of spin to it, and then it comes down and just the smash with the shattering of the pumpkin that flies all over. Just, I don't know, something satisfying about that.
What tips would you have for people who would like to try their hand at growing pumpkins? What do they need to know about that?
Well, you know, I think definitely talking to other growers is a good place to start, finding out what varieties work well in that area and what they're looking for as well, because there's a lot of different varieties. You know, if someone wants to try their hand at growing a giant pumpkin, that's a whole lot different than if they're looking to grow some smaller pie pumpkins.
Sure. Yeah, we heard all about giant pumpkins earlier. Gosh, a 2,000-pound pumpkin, that's just really hard to imagine. What's the biggest pumpkin that you've grown?
You know, we haven't really gone into the giant pumpkins. You know, we've had some that are a couple hundred pounds, but we haven't ever put the care into it that's required to really grow one of the big ones.
Yeah, a lot of people after Halloween, they just toss their pumpkins out. They end up in the trash or someone smashes them on the curb. But do you do any kind of post-Halloween pumpkin smashing event so people don't just have to throw them out?
No, we haven't really done that. You know, a lot of our pumpkins that are left over will go for deer or cattle or pigs. You know, a lot of livestock feed or the deer as well. The deer just loves the pumpkins, especially after they froze.
Sure. So how far do people come to watch the flying pumpkins? Where's the farthest away a person has come to see this? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. I know we had a couple of people out there last night. They weren't watching the catapulting, but from Italy and Kazakhstan that were...
Wow.
In the area on a foreign exchange program.
That's amazing. Well, gosh, this has been fascinating, and I'm really interested in this. I'm going to have to find a way to get down there, but not this year. Andrew Mumsen, thank you this time for real. Thank you for being with us this morning and sharing your pumpkin knowledge with our audience. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, John. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Andrew Mumsen is the owner of Mumsen's Harvest Hills Pumpkin Patch and Apple Orchard in Rice Lake. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCullum.
The music world has blessed us with some gems about the Milwaukee Brewers. In light of the team's success this season, a few new songs have popped up honoring the crew, like the song Christian Yelich by the Milwaukee hip-hop collective High Tribe. And of course, there are some songs that fans have deemed classics. Who can forget the 1980s crowd rouser, Brewer Fever?
Come see what's brewing, the Milwaukee Brewers.
Or the soft rocker, Talkin' Baseball, Brewers Edition.
Talkin' Baseball, Brewers all the way.
Another classic Brewers anthem is Turning Up the Heat. It was written in 1985 by Milwaukee area composer and jingle writer Terry Sweet. Sweet was a huge Brewers fan when the team reached out to him to write them a new song.
They wanted me to write a song for the Brewers, and they didn't have a theme line or anything, so I just had a wide open slate, and so it was like, okay, just go make us a song. You know, I was excited just to have any business with the Brewers was pretty cool. You know, we have some alliteration there. Brewers are brewing up a barrel of fun. And, you know, that when it comes down to it, that's really what it's all about, is fun. It's fun to go to a Brewers game.
It is a barrel of fun. Brewers are always a barrel of fun.
Absolutely. I knew I wanted to do something pretty rock, just a little bit raucous. I couldn't go too crazy, of course, because it has to appeal to a very wide demographic audience. But I wanted to rock it as hard as I could within those parameters. So I was really looking for that sense of energy and excitement that you get. You know, I remember watching some of those playoff games and just keep turning it, keep pushing. You know, it's that competitive spirit. I think that's really what I was going for there.
What was it like the first time that you heard your song played at County Stadium?
I was really excited. I was pumped. We clap our hands,
stomp our feet. The clap your hands and stomp your feet line to that, I'm wondering if that was a throwback to another famous and beloved Brewer song, Brewer Fever, because, you know, they say, stomp your feet and clap your hands. Was that intentional or was that just...
No, it wasn't intentional.
Okay.
I was thinking about the tension when you have a very important game, the stands are full, and people will stand there and they will stomp their feet and they'll, you know, obviously clap their hands. And those are the two ways that fans can express themselves in the stadium.
This also is one of those songs that can get stuck in your head and impossible to get out of your head.
That's a shame.
Is that intentional?
Well, of course. I'm a jingle writer. That's what I do. I torture people. First of all, I'm just really glad the song has had this resurgence with the success of the team this year. And when the team reaches this level of success, I really feel a sense of community connection. And I feel like everybody in Wisconsin is kind of vibrating on the same level. And to play any part in that, I feel then kind of connected with that whole vibe myself. And it's a very cool feeling.
Terry Sweet is a music composer, jingle writer, and mega Brewers fan who lives in Wauwatosa. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell & Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.